You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this episode, Reggie discusses the importance of giving up our ideas and preconceptions about the Dharma and Buddhism. At this point in history, he says, many practitioners are called to take part in the unique unfolding of what the Dharma is right now, a deeply creative process of questioning, discovery, and sharing. This talk was given at the 2010 Winter Datun, a month-long retreat held at the Blazing Mountain Retreat Center in Crestone, Colorado.
We arrive at the gates of the Vajra world with many, many ideas about ourselves, our lives, and especially about Buddhism, about the Dharma, about meditation, about spirituality. And under normal circumstances, that's fine. That's okay. And we can, the Dharma requires that we revise our ideas about ourselves and our world, but not about the Dharma. Generally, you know, we don't have to. The Dharma's, in most cultures, it's there, it's a fixture, so to speak. But periodically in the history of Buddhism, things change. And we have to look at the Dharma as it is now appearing. And we have to kind of revise everything, and particularly what we think about Buddhism needs to be revised. And we are in that situation now in the West, and in particular in this lineage. So a lot of what we're doing here, you know, fundamentally practice is our main thing in this lineage. And the view of the practicing lineage is that, as I was saying the other night, first we do our practice, and out of the practice we make a lot of discoveries. And to some extent these are discoveries that other people are making, and to a very large extent they're discoveries that nobody else is making. And out of that, those discoveries, both our own discoveries and the discoveries we share with others, emerges a different way of considering the Dharma and thinking about it. Particularly in our current situation in this culture, with Buddhism having arrived so very, very recently, it's very, very important that the practice comes first. One of the difficulties that we find everywhere is, and particularly with my generation, but also, you know, more recently, is people think that by reading a lot of books they can find out what Buddhism is. They read a lot of books and then they try to apply what they've read in the books to our current situation, and it doesn't work because these books, you know, many of which I personally, you know, I spent my whole life, you know, reading, writing, and so on, but these books reflect a different time and place, different times and different places. So in our culture, it's actually almost more important not to read books about Buddhism in this lineage. Now, we still have to do it, but we have to have that sort of proviso or that warning that what we're going to read in the books isn't exactly what we need to be doing, but it can inspire us and provoke us and make us think more deeply. That's all good. But we can't take the books or the traditional teachings at face value, because that's not the world we live in. Now, some people in this world are called to preserve the Asian traditions, and that's a very worthy enterprise. It's a very good thing for some people. And there are people who are devoting themselves, like, you know, people like us. They go to Southeast Asia and they practice in the monasteries and they practice in the forest, and they receive the teachings within an Asian context, in an Asian idiom, about Asian concerns. And their mission, at least for the time being, is to help those traditions survive, and that's a very, very good thing. the traditional Asian forms of Buddhism really need to survive in this world. They need to survive not only for the ethnic people, the people in Southeast Asia or the people in the Tibetan community, less so the Japanese, because the whole Japanese culture is changing so fast, it's going to be hard. Really, Zen has changed so much now, I don't know if the traditional thing, how much it's there. And China, same thing. I mean, it would be good if those, if Chan in China and Sun in Korea and Zen in Japan could be preserved in their traditional form. So this is very, very important. If you're called to it, that's a very important and worthy and very sacred enterprise. But that's not what we're doing. You know, our task is to have the, you know, is to have the imagination and the openness and the courage to study all the traditions, but then to look deeply into our own practice and see what the Dharma needs to be. Now you might say, well, how can I look into my own practice? You know, how can, I mean, you might say with me, well, he can look into his practice, or Caroline can look into her practice, or the senior students and the senior teachers can look into their practice, but why should I look into my practice? Because when we are looking into our practice in the way we do in this lineage, we are looking through the veil of our own individual personality at something deeper and more fundamental. We're looking, you know, as we work through the body, we're looking into the depth of our own experience. And we're looking even through our own experience into the fundamental nature of reality, which is the open, endless awareness that underlies everything. It underlies our own personal life, but it's also that same limitless ocean of awareness and space. You know, space and awareness are the same thing in our lineage, and they truly are infinite. And we're looking into that, and we are learning how to surrender and listen. And out of the depth of that space, things arise. And we learn things, and we see things, and we see how things need to be. When we do that, when, you know, and I understand that in the beginning of practice, we may feel like in doing earth practice, I can only get an inch under the surface. That's all I can really do. But in time, we will open, and even, you know, brand new practitioners, suddenly everything opens up, and there is that depth. When we learn to do that, we're no longer vehicles for our own personal concerns. We make ourselves available for something much more fundamental. And that comes through us. It comes through me, and it comes through you. And we experience it as insight, not as my personal ego trip or my personal thing. It has the stamp of a reality that is more fundamental. And that's what we bring to our lives, to our relationships, and that's what we bring into the Sangha. In some sense, and not even in some sense, I would say in a complete sense, what happens when we do that as individuals and as a Sangha, reality is giving birth to a new way of practicing the Dharma in this culture. And it's not us, and it's not me, it's not you. It's reality itself, and the reason it's happening is because we're making ourselves available through our practice. So reading the books is good, but it's not the main thing. And studying Buddhism is good, but it's not the main thing. The main thing is our practice at this moment in history and allowing, making ourselves available for what needs to happen. It's a task of tremendous importance. It's a task of tremendous devotion and opening and surrender. And for some reason, we've all been called to it, those of us here. There's so much in life we will never understand. The organized religions answer everything. And they give you an answer for everything, and that's not helpful. The more answers you have, the less questions you have. And the less questions you have, the less open you are. Trungpa Rinpoche's wonderful dictum is, the question is the answer. If your mind is in a state of questioning, that's the answer. The answer means, what are we looking for? We're looking for that kind of open mind in our life. We're not looking for answers. We're not looking to pin things down. So, you know, there's, when I teach, just speaking for myself, I don't, my focus is, kind of nowhere, in a sense. And that's our journey. You know, the more we can all relax with what's happening and devote ourselves to practice, the more we see emerging this most beautiful thing, emerging, you know, in our midst and through us and around us. Relaxation, opening, relaxing, and enjoying the ride. And sometimes we don't enjoy it at all, because the ride is like the you know, I mean, roller coasters, up to a point, they're fun. And then they're not fun anymore. And this is our thing. This is the nature of our life. Now, one thing I want to say about the Sangha is everything that each one of us is contributes to this unfolding. I mean, of course, there are people at the beginning and people who have been at this a long time. But when I say everybody's included, what I'm talking about is that every single one of us, the more we make ourselves available, and oddly enough, even when we are trying not to make ourselves available, we're still available. And the lineage is pouring through all of us. And therefore, it's so important that all the voices are included in the dance. It's like we have all of us here, and there's this huge dance that's happening, and we're all included, and the movement that every one of us makes is part of the dance and an essential part of it. So when we are working with one another, we need to realize that, you know, our voice, number one, is respecting our own voice and our own insights. Our voice is so much needed by everybody, even if it's, we just walked in off the street to a datan, never meditated in our life, and the voice of all of us is needed. And we all need to hold the situation with that thing in mind. And the warmth and the affection and the sweetness that we feel here is so appropriate. And it's a response to that exact situation, that we're all included, we're all invited, and we, in fact, even when we're having a bad day, we rejoice in one another, whoever we are. This is the community Maitri practice, is this way of including all of us. And even if somebody comes in completely freaked out, and I would say especially if they come in completely freaked out, they're bringing a gift. If somebody is having a deep sort of grief or sadness or feeling, you know, very angry or resentful, they're bringing a gift. And the gift is to be discovered in our interactions with that person. We have to see. But in order to do it, we have to really be there. We have to remain home in our own space and open ourselves, open our awareness and include them. And then the gift makes itself known. So, you know, we talk about Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. The Buddha is the teacher principle. The Dharma is the teachings. But the Sangha situation is very powerful, as I've been saying. As I mentioned the other day, individually, everybody we meet here brings a part of ourself back. But everybody we meet here brings a part of what this lineage needs to be. And so that's a yet another dimension of this. So the respect that we have for one another and the affection we have for one another and the all of the friction and the heat and the sparks that come from our interactions and the love that we feel here is very, very real. when we leave here, we may see a Sangha member on the street and we don't feel the same way. And the reason is that we've lost touch with the depth, where the connection is there and where each one of us is part of this whole beautiful unfolding that is occurring in our own lives and in our relationships with each other. It's not that this wasn't real, because sometimes people tell me that, well, you know, it was really great in this program and I really loved the people I was with and I saw them and I don't feel that way now and I guess that wasn't real. I'm here to tell you that this is what's real. And the feeling of disconnection and disinterest, that's not real. That's what's not real. So I just want to put that out there, because I know, you know, we're coming to the end of week 3 and I want us to, you know, deeply, deeply appreciate and love one another and let that be the reality. And let us miss it, you know, when we're not here, and let us know that, you know, at some point we need to find that again, you know, in some way with one another.
More of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.